Herald and News.
Herald and News, your news now.
Herald and News.
Empowering the community.
Basin Views.
Herald and News, your news now. Klamath Falls, Oregon.
The Herald and News.
Podcast.
Empowering the community and serving the Klamath Basin. This is the Herald and News Basin Views Podcast. Greetings and welcome to Basin Views, a Herald and News podcast featuring interviews with local experts discussing issues important to the Klamath Basin. I'm Kurt Lidke with the Herald and News. This week we are joined by one of our own, Eric Johnston, Western Division President for Adams Publishing, a large national newspaper conglomerate which, among its properties, include not only the Herald and News, but also the Lake County Examiner in Lakeview. Eric, thanks for taking some time to speak with us about media today.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Well, before we get into the state of media today, I always like to start these off with getting a little bit of background on our guests. So can you kind of clue us in on who you are and a little bit of your background?
Sure. So I started 30 years ago almost as a photojournalist. I've got my degree in photojournalism, and I worked as a working photographer for small newspapers, community-sized newspapers like the Herald and News, for a long time. And back in the mid-90s, when everything was new about digital, I kind of started working through website development and spent the next 15 years building websites and website business models for newspaper companies. And then back in 2009, I was promoted to a publisher of a community newspaper and then became essentially a media bureaucrat and moved to Pioneer, now Adams, about 4.5 years ago.
There was a merger last year, some of our readers may recall, that Herald and News and other properties under what was then called Pioneer News Group was bought by Adams Publishing. Now, you were involved with Pioneer. Now, you're still a part of Adams. So can you tell me about that relationship a little bit?
Sure. So I had been with Pioneer for 4 years as the chief operating officer, essentially overseeing the operational efforts at each of our newspapers, about 24 in the Northwest. And after the acquisition, I was fortunate enough to be kept on by Adams Publishing as the Western Division Vice President, which is about, it's roughly the same footprint that we had prior with Pioneer, plus a couple of additional newspapers in places like Idaho Falls. So the transition to this point has gone really well. We've had a lot of changes in the corporate side, but you know, the changes I think have been good.
So Pioneer before had, if I remember, about 20, 25 newspapers in that range. How big is Adams?
Well, that's a really good question. Last week, 10 days ago, Adams announced the acquisition of a group in Florida called the Suncoast Media Group. So I have to admit, I'm not exactly sure of the number, but I'm pretty confident that it's over 150 titles at this point across the country.
A lot of those newspapers are in more regional and rural markets like the Herald and News in Klamath Falls, where people are somewhat limited in terms of options. We've seen the way that people access media drastically change just over the past 10 years or so with the advent of social media's popularity and more online sources. But in places like this where there's limited amounts of TV coverage and newspapers, how important is newspapers in markets with limited media base?
I think they're critical. Newspapers in markets like Klamath Falls are really the only primary source of consistent information, I think, that our communities have. And not only are they sources of information, but they're engagement platforms. So letters to the editor or, you know, even through social media channels and Twitter and things like that, they can participate with the newspaper very actively. And newspapers reflect the community. You know, people like to see themselves in the pages of the paper. And at the most macro or micro level, I should say, newspapers are the preservation of democracy at the local level. If it wasn't for the Herald and News, who would be going to the city council meetings, the school board meetings, the high school football games regularly? There really wouldn't be anybody. Yahoo wouldn't be there. Well, I guess Yahoo doesn't exist. Google wouldn't be there. Facebook wouldn't be there. You know, it's really the Herald and News that preserves and protects the community's access to that information.
So how has social media and the way that people have changed in terms of they communicate? It seems like more people text now than actually make phone calls. How has social media and the way that people communicate changed print journalism?
Well, I can't say that it's really changed print journalism. I think that, you know, journalism needs to be one of those things that's consistent. The style may change. You know, journalism at its core is objective, truth-based reporting. So when we look at the style our reporters take, instead of writing stories that are traditionally like an inverted pyramid, you know, an upside down pyramid, they may be more like a champagne glass where they get to the facts quicker. They kind of go widen out again with more a greater scope. Then they go back to narrow facts. But also they may be in shorter bursts, not to the listical standpoint like on a BuzzFeed, but rather things that can be quickly digested through a mobile phone or on Facebook. And so it gives reporters, rather than changing the journalistic style, it gives them other methods by which to communicate the information, which I think is really a great advantage for companies like ours.
Here at the Herald and News, we've been trying to branch out into other avenues to reach people. We do a lot of video work. Obviously, we do a lot of podcasting. We've even been doing some drone work, live streaming, 360 videos, and weekly video news series as well, that people can kind of get their headlines on the go. What are newspapers doing, generally speaking, to evolve as the audiences have been changing in terms of how they acquire their information?
Well, I think it's all of those things you just mentioned. It used to be 20 or 30 years ago, you know, the editor determined what the most important story of the day was by its placement on page A1. And now the consumer marketplace really gets to determine what's the most important thing that they want. And we can see that metric, whether it's through web statistics or through social media shares. And so it gives us an insight into what the community wants, maybe more so than we ever had before. When, you know, 25 or 30 years ago, when someone subscribed to the paper, we made the, I think, naive assumption that they read it from front to back. And that's really not the case. Nobody reads those things. They skim them. They find what they, you know, serendipitously discover what they want. And so through that, it allows us kind of greater access to communities and really, again, greater, presumably greater engagement in the way that people want to engage with us. We don't get to pick anymore. They get to pick, which I think is not a bad thing. It normalizes the field to a certain degree.
So what do you really see as the future of print journalism at this point?
Well, I think it's going to continue. We've seen a lot of consolidation in our industry over the last few years. Large companies are buying up, you know, newspapers, and you're seeing more and more. I have colleagues of mine who are convinced, for example, in what they're considering the 5-5-5 scenario, which is that all newspapers, all TV stations, and all radio companies will be essentially owned by five different media conglomerates. I think that I'm not sure that that's exactly how it's going to play out, because I think, you know, there are far more independent owners of newspapers in the country than there are conglomerated owners. But I do think that, you know, print will continue to be a challenging business model given the circumstances we're in. I mean, we've been hit with tariffs from the government lately on newsprint and aluminum that we require for plates. So that makes the economics tougher. Advertisers are looking for new sources of audience. And while we can offer access to all of those things, I think that sometimes, unfortunately, advertisers don't look to the newspaper first for digital advertising, which in a market like Klamath Falls, they should. So I think that print newspapers will continue. I think that, you know, at my age, I've still got a good amount of time in this industry, and I think that print newspapers will still be around. I think what you may see is a continued compression of what I guess you would consider middle market newspapers, ones that were big enough to get major retail advertising and significant dollars that have now dried up, starting to be squeezed away because now they just don't have the local support perhaps that they did in those markets, where I do believe that markets like the Herald and News and in Lakeview, they'll continue to serve communities very well. And I think that's why Adams, who acquired Pioneer, looks for markets like this to buy, because they see that there is a longer-term future. A market like Klamath Falls believes in or needs the newspaper more than a market like, and I would say, Dallas. And here's an example. When I was a publisher, I would have friends of mine ask, you know, don't you get crazy with people calling you as the publisher saying, I didn't get my newspaper, or I've got a complaint about the newspaper? And my response was always the same. I'd be more concerned if they stopped calling. And I think here in Klamath Falls, we know for a fact, if somebody doesn't get their paper, chances are they're going to call and complain, which they absolutely should do, because we want to provide top shelf customer service. But if they stop calling, that means they don't really care if they got it or not. And that's a problem. And so we want to really make sure that people still care about getting that product.
It's been a fascinating time to be a journalist lately. In the last year or two, there's a new phrase that has caught on like wildfire of people making accusations of fake news. And just recently, we had the president actually refer to the media as public enemy number one at a rally. As an executive who oversees multiple newspapers, this new added hostility towards journalism and media in general, how do you deal with that in a realm where suddenly there's so much open hostility towards people who are trying to provide facts and information?
You know, that's a great question, and that's a hard question. It's disappointing to see this level of vitriol coming from the President of the United States and from elected leaders throughout the country. It's the media and journalists have never been and should never be the best friends of elected officials. It doesn't work well if they are. But if you have the government actively and aggressively condemning what really is an important part of democracy, then I think that ultimately erodes what our communities have come to depend on us for. And I think that this whole thing with fake news, it's a smokescreen, it's a diversion tactic, it's a way to bang the drum for, you know, whatever you read is not real. I think in dealing with local markets like Klamath Falls, it's really going to be quickly identifiable if a story about a local city council meeting is quote unquote fake, if there's inaccurate facts, because the people who live in this market know it to be true or they know it to be false. And if they call us, if they call the editor, then if there's a fact that's wrong, we'll fix it. We'll correct it. That's what we do. When you talk about larger scale national stuff, you know, they say, well, that's fake. Well, you know, I probably wouldn't know whether it's true or not. I mean, honestly, I don't believe most of what I read on the internet unless it's coming from a credible news source like Herald and News, Wall Street Journal, Washington Post, New York Times. I mean, I'm very skeptical of the sources of information. I've almost completely eliminated Facebook from any level of either accuracy or credibility in my personal mind, because everything on there it's a confirmation bias circle. So if somebody believes it, then they read what they believed, and therefore they know they're right, and therefore then they post it, and then they read it. It's this self-shaming spiral. What's really troubling, even more so than the verbal attacks, are what happened in the Capitol. The Capitol Gazette just 10 days ago, where someone who actively, you know, violently attacked reporters for, you know, reporting that was completely factual years in the past, but who held clearly a grudge. And, you know, as a journalist yourself, and I have, you know, certainly kind of casually brushed off threats from subjects of stories. You know, I would take photos of people who are arrested in prostitution stings, or, you know, who are arrested for DUI, who would call the newsroom and threaten to beat me up, or, you know, I've had guns pulled on me and things like that. And I've kind of casually brushed them aside as, well, they're really not serious. We can't take that casually anymore. I think as journalists in America, we've been blessed with a society and a civility that respects what we do. If you look at countries like, you know, Russia or Mexico, you know, South American countries, there are a lot of journalists who are targeted and killed. They're assassinated because they're reporting against the government or whomever, and these people feel that they can eliminate the problem by eliminating the source of the information. It's scary to think that, especially in a culture that is so polarized, you have to be careful about talking about many topics with people anymore, just because everybody seems to have an opinion and it goes from 0 to 100 so quickly. You know, working for a newspaper, I've always been very aware of being as moderate and middle of the road as I possibly could, because, you know, they saw me as a newspaper representative. You know, you're not supposed to have one side or the other unless it's on the editorial page. And even then, it's the institution, not the person. But for people to take out personal vendettas against reporters it's terrifying. And I think, you know, our society should be outraged by those kinds of attacks.
The sad reality is I personally haven't met a single reporter at this point that hasn't received at least one veiled threat at some point or another. And before it was something, you know, we'd laugh about at staff meetings, but it's not something to laugh about anymore. The other thing that we hear quite often, which is frustrating from a reporting perspective, because our job is to report on what's happening, not to interject ourselves into the matter, but just within the last couple of weeks, I received a phone call of someone saying that they wanted to cancel their subscription because they couldn't stand how liberally slanted the Herald News was. And the next day I got a phone call from someone saying, I can't stand how conservative your paper is, when we're trying to tread the middle path. So there is a matter of knowing your audience. But within that, how do you go take the approach of being neutral while still knowing the audience when people are coming into it with such biased perceptions?
Well, it's more pronounced now than I think it ever has been, where again, this perception of, well, I guess we could say that as a society, we've lost our objectivity and we've lost our ability to rationally comprehend opposing information. So, you know, if you have a particular belief or feeling, you tend to gravitate towards those media sources that will confirm your beliefs. And so TV does this a lot, you know, hate radio. They've got a lot of talk radio and internet websites and things like that. Newspapers are still in this world of we need to be objective sources of information. So I would get, like you, I would get calls all the time of you're too liberal or you're too conservative. And at the end of a week, if I had roughly 50-50, then I was probably in good shape. But, you know, if you think about just reporting, and it seems to have increased in tone and tenor in the last, you know, year and a half, really. People would say you're reporting bad things about the presidential administration. It's all the bad news and all the bad news. The reality is there hasn't been a whole lot of good news. And so when you're reporting facts, you can't just kind of gin up good things to make it look like things are OK. I mean, you have to report the real truth. And under the previous administrations, we would get a lot of complaints about reporting of the Bush administration, the Obama administration. You know, you're putting too many good things about reporting about the Affordable Care Act. You're too liberal. You support Obama. No, it's a story about the Affordable Care Act and how people use it. It's not supporting one way or another. But, you know, I think where it's kind of fallen down is people being willing to accept the opinions of others and say, respectfully, I disagree, and then move on. It seems to be if you don't agree with my opinions, then you are my opponent. And I think that's unfortunate, because what we really strive to do as an industry, and newspapers in particular, is educate and inform and help provide people with information that will help them lead their lives better. And, you know, it's a lofty goal, but I think, you know, our staff, our reporters here, our reporters in all of our markets do that every single day. And in all candor and in all honesty, none of our reporters deserve that kind of abuse. I mean, these are folks who are working long hours, reporters in general, and they're not paid very much. And they don't need that kind of abuse on top of, you know, all those other factors going into it.
So overseeing our Western division now of Adams, which covers newspapers from Utah all the way up into Washington, Idaho, Montana, as part of this greater veil of this national conglomerate of Adams Publishing, what are you working on these days?
Well, for me, that's a good question. So we're always trying to find ways that we can be, well, that we can do a couple of things. One, that we can financially perform to the degree that allows us to continue to support our newsrooms, continue to support our community efforts. And a lot of that is through developing new sales programs, finding ways to become more operationally efficient, you know, saving money where we can. And we've done a lot of that through our region. We've centralized a lot of different functions of our operations, and it's proven out to be very effective. You know, having been a journalist, I'm very sensitive to our resources in our newsrooms. And I mean, I wish I could hire, you know, dozens more reporters. But until we can kind of build a stable foothold with, you know, revenue sources and kind of stop some of the challenging economic conditions, that's going to be hard to do. But that's what our goal is. I mean, at the end of every day, the beginning of every day and the end of every day, my goal really is how can I work to better support the efforts going on in Klamath Falls, in Bozeman, in Nampa. And I think those are, again, it's a day-to-day thing, but I think that we are making strides.
More and more newspapers, the Herald News included, are putting more emphasis on multimedia content as people are turning more towards digital. A lot of people are, you know, cutting even cable for TV and going to things like Sling. Fewer people are picking up physical print, and they're more reading things on their phones or tablets or computers. What is multimedia's importance associated with print journalism's engagement? And what are some of the kind of the innovative things that are coming down the line to connect with those audiences that are looking for digital versus print?
Sure. A great question. We kind of have this rare situation where we're trying to serve two masters. You know, we've got thousands of people who want to get a copy of a newspaper every day. But then on the other hand, we've got thousands of people who want to read our products electronically every day. And so the print product stays relatively static. We know it's going to be a certain size and a certain page count. We know it's going to be delivered at a certain time. The digital piece is far more dynamic. And so we're constantly trying to move the needle on those digital efforts so that we can provide them with what they want. What's interesting is roughly 2/3 of our digital traffic at this point comes in through mobile devices. So we're always looking for ways that we can maximize what kind of tools we provide through a mobile device, whether it's little contests or how we present stories, a video, for example. And some of the challenges with video, for example, it's kind of hard to produce. And, you know, not everybody watches it, but some people do. And, you know, there's not a whole lot of monetization for us. Okay, if we spend a lot of money to do it, are we going to get a lot of money back? So some of those are very experimental. I know we've done some great stuff in Klamath Falls with augmented reality, right? So it giving people a chance to experience advertising, whether it's in print or digitally, a different way through their mobile device, which it might seem like right now it's more sizzle than steak, but those are the kinds of things I think we need to explore, because they may then bear fruit when it comes to emerging business models. We just don't know. I mean, at the point, everything today that works at some point in its history didn't work. You know, penicillin wasn't penicillin when they discovered what it was. So you never know which one is going to be the one that really takes off. And that's why we take these little experimental divergences occasionally to try new things. And that's what's kind of exciting, because we still have the ability to do that through, you know, mainly our employees. I mean, our team members and our associates are the ones who come to us and say, I've got an idea. Can we try it out? Sure. Give it a shot. And let's see if it works. And if it does work, maybe we can take it to other places, which is the fun part of the job. It's really the kind of part we look forward to doing most often.
With as drastically changing as the media industry is these days, why should people still be involved in it? Why get involved in media when there is the vitriol and animosity that we talked about, when the job itself is drastically changing, where there's more pressure on people who may be writers to do things like video that they may not have experience in? Why do this?
That is a great question. When I started as a photojournalist when I was 16 years old in high school, it was because being a photographer was cool. And I thought it was cool with the chemicals and cool with the processing. And then as I started working for a community newspaper, I started to realize that there was a greater kind of moral imperative with media. And that was, how do we improve our communities? It's a megaphone that very few people have access to, and it's very trusted. And the people who do the work have to be respectful of what they do, and they have to be trusted and trustworthy. So I think if there are people who are considering a career in media, I think it's a great place to work. Is it hard? Yeah, it's hard. But, you know, every job at sub level is hard. But it's also the kind of job where you're going to get to meet more people and see more things and do more stuff and have more experiences than you would with many other jobs. I mean, as a photographer, I've, you know, been on cattle drives and in hot air balloons and on police chases and, you know, fires and, you know, whatever it was. And that was really an exciting part of my day. As I've kind of advanced through the industry, matured, if you will, you know, now it's trying to find the things that would allow us to do that on a larger scale. We talked about the operational efficiencies and how do we find this. But I think for today's, I'm really hopeful, I guess I should say, for the next generation of media, because, you know, I don't think that we as an industry should hire any more, well, I'm a writer. Well, I sell newspaper ads. Well, that's not the world that we live in anymore. Now, you know, if we look at new journalists coming into to our companies, it's going to be people who have, you know, well, you know, I produce my own podcast, or I know how to shoot and edit video. I can take pictures. I do this. And so multimedia journalism is really the next wave. And I think as we continue to mature the process, that's going to be an even more important part. So I think it's really exciting. So that's from the why you should be a working journalist standpoint, because I don't think there's a more exciting job out there. Why people should be involved and engaged with the media on the consumer level is because it's the only thing out there that's going to help provide them with the information that they really need from an objective source. If it's on Facebook and your sister-in-law's brother's cousin forwarded it to you, it doesn't mean that it's true and it doesn't mean that it's accurate. So, you know, there's an old axiom, you know, if your mother tells you she loves you, check your sources. And that's really true, especially in social media. And I'm worried about people who simply take and read stories on Facebook or on Twitter or on whatever else and take it as gospel, because it's really not. During the last election, someone was asking me, they said, well, I read this story on Facebook. And I said, okay. And they told me about the story. And I said, well, what was the source of the story? Well, I read it on Facebook. Well, Facebook didn't write it. Who wrote the story? Well, I don't know. Well, was it the Dallas Morning News, or was it Breitbart, or was it Fox News, or was it, you know, CNN? They didn't know, but it was on Facebook. So I think media companies like the Herald and News, like Adams Publishing, we're working really hard to reestablish ourselves in the communities to say, look, Facebook is fun, and it should be fun. It's social, it's engaging. But when it comes down to objective, real, truthful information, they really need to look at, you know, whether it's get a newspaper delivered to your door, great. Open it up on your mobile phone, great. Download the app, great. Download the podcast, watch a video, whatever it is. Engage in whatever way you feel most comfortable, but just engage at some level, because that will ultimately make our communities better. It will make our society better, and it'll strengthen our democracy. And again, lofty, you know, blah, 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 blah. But I really do think that at the end of the day, that's what it's all about.
Eric Johnston is the Western Division President of Adams Publishing Group, which, among its properties, owns the Herald and News here in Klamath Falls, as well as the Lake County Examiner out in Lakeview and many other publications all across the country. Eric, thank you so much for taking the time out to speak with us today. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.